The VGR Treaty Gaming Podcast, episode 330, recorded on October 28th, 2013. Hello, and welcome to the 330th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 163rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and gaming flashback. So, it's almost Halloween.
Ooh.
I don't know if we have any news items that have anything to do with Halloween, but...
You know. We don't. I could go hook up my theremin real quick.
You have a theremin?
I have a theremin.
Wow. Did you see the documentary on the theremin?
I own the documentary on the theremin and the one on Bob Moog.
Yeah, I saw the one on Bob Moog as well. But the thing is that the documentary fascinated me in certain ways in that I saw how it started. You know, it was a serious orchestral instrument. And this woman this woman was an expert at it. And just
Clara Rockmore, yeah.
And then the 50s movies just trashed it as a serious instrument.
So. Well, what I found fascinating, my favorite part of the whole documentary is at the very end where they find out that not only is Leon Theremin still alive, but Clara Rockmore is still alive too, and they reunite the two. I thought that was just beautiful and brilliant. I love that.
Is he still alive now?
Oh, no. He was like 90-something years old in 96, so he's long since passed, and Rockmore as well. But
if I remember Theremin...
They lived long enough to be reunited on film.
That documentary
that's awesome.
Was in 1986? No.
96, I think.
96, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was nominated for an Oscar, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing anything. I've been laying flat on my back trying not to move. you know, it's a sad life when your foot is trying to kill you. So, yeah.
This really peeves me right now because my iPad only recorded the music but not anything else, even though it took a long time just to... You know, upload all those movies, and I have no idea what's going on here.
I'm just going to say there's a reason that I upgraded to a Surface. I'm not using an iPad anymore.
Well, I don't have an option in the matter because there's iOS software that I must use.
Right.
So what have I been playing? So this is going to be the rant portion of the podcast. So I have been playing Deus Ex Human Revolution, the director's cut, which I only had to pay $10 to upgrade to because I had the PC version. And it adds all the stuff that was added, including the Wii U, which removes some of the it changes the boss fights because the main complaint about the boss fights were that they were outsourced and they had almost no connect to the rest of the game. And any build that you were doing, if it wasn't pure guns and violence, then you had a tough time with them, right? So I'm starting that. I also bought Sir, You Are Being Hunted, which is a on early access, in which you play a fugitive who's being hunted by upper class British robots. Sort of like
are these like the Prince Robot Head guys from that comic book saga?
No, but it's just that it's sort of like you're the fox, and they're trying to hunt you. And it's a survival.
I have a question. I have a question on Deus Ex, by the way. Alan says that they've removed the urine-colored filter from the game. Is that true? It's not as yellow as it used to be?
No, that's not true. You could always remove that filter, by the way.
On the PC version, I'm sure.
No, I mean, you could always... and it's not a urine color. It's a black and gold color scheme. And it's deliberate. And finally, I got Batman Arkham Origins, and I pre-ordered it on PC, so it was waiting for me, because I preloaded it. And the one thing I have to say is that did anybody do any sort of Q&A on the game?
I've been hearing nothing but bad things about the game.
One person playing the game could have spotted bugs that literally kill the game. And by that, I mean it puts you in a place where you cannot continue and you have to start over. One is the Burnley Tower, in which you have to rip off a grate, right? And you've played Batman.
Oh, yes.
You know how you use the bat claw to rip off a grate, then you jump up and you enter in the grate?
Yep, yep.
Well, in this case, he just hangs there by his fingertips because of some collision error.
Oh, no.
And... you can't get out because the Riddler's trapped you in there. Now, what you could do is restart from a checkpoint and just ignore it because it wasn't part of the main quest. However, if you do the Mad Hatter, there is a part in which you have to go on a raft and you use the bat claw to, you know, draw yourself to these poles, right? With a ring on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The raft is stuck when you try to do that and you cannot move forward. And in this case, you cannot restart from an earlier checkpoint.
Because the checkpoint reverts you back to the beginning of the quest.
Well, to the middle of the quest, but same difference. And since there's no save games, you cannot leave. Therefore, you must start your game over.
Wow. That's pretty broken.
Yes. And I find it hard to believe that any sort of QA wouldn't have brought this up. This is a classic case of Warner Brothers Interactive saying, we want it released before Halloween. Do it now. And here's the thing. I suspect they knew about these bugs because they had an embargo in which that was on the day of release.
Yeah.
Anybody who knows anything about movies, when you do not have day one reviews for a movie, that usually indicates that that movie is going to be terrible. That's not always true because I remember that Batman Mask of the Phantasm did not have any day one reviews, but I think that had something to do with a that had more to do with a logistics issue.
Right. But usually, and a lot of times when you're talking about movies, it's a lack of confidence on the part of the studio.
Well, no,
whether it's good or bad, it's just a lack of confidence.
Well, in this case, they had to have known something was seriously wrong with it.
Yeah.
There's no way anybody who even took a sideways glance at the game. Something tells me that they just wanted to get the main quest done. And my problem is, you know what? Why don't you just have it so that you automatically, you know, forget the physics. Just say, okay, you're at this point. Just, you know, it's a critical point. Just do it. You know, ignore physics. Just have them automatically go through whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the same problem that I had with Assassin's Creed Liberation on the Vita. There was a bug in the game where your save game would corrupt and you would be stuck at a perpetual saving screen and you were done. You had to start the game over. They knew about the bug. They had a plan to fix the bug. It took 2 months after the launch of the game to actually bring the game to a point where you could play it.
I just don't get this. And I cannot play. I refuse to start over. And you know, if the patch makes it, if the patch is incompatible with my save game, it'll be just that much worse.
Now, what about the console versions? Do we know about the console version
has the same issues?
The reason why
I know they have the same issues is because there is a quote unquote workaround for the Burnley Tower bug, in which you have to go into the back or something. You have to do some convoluted things, have Batman hump the tower from the outside on the other end or something like that, and then it doesn't. But that doesn't help the other issues. And if on the Steam community page, there is a long list of bugs in the game. This game should not have been released.
Now the interesting thing is I was reading the reviews that were available on day one, and what I found fascinating was even the negative reviews, they didn't really say it was buggy, but it fell into the trap of that I have with most modern game criticism, in that their arguments were, it's the same as Arkham City. It's just more of the same.
But
every time there's a new Mario game, all of these press outlets are like, oh my God, new Mario game. When it's just more of the same.
Well, I think lowered expectations there.
Well, I think
really
what it
lowered
is
expectations.
Is there are certain franchises that get a pass when they do more of the same. And there are certain franchises that don't get a pass. And I found it interesting that they, you know, everybody loved Arkham City, and then the complaints were, yeah, it's just the same as Arkham City. But wait, you loved Arkham City. How can you say that this is a bad game? But now with your complaints, it makes much more sense.
At least the story is much different. And I will say this about Origins, is that the story is just as thrilling as the other two games. I mean, there's a wonderful twist early that, you know, that I was able to get to before the before that game-ending bug happened, you know, and I
enjoyed the first game. I finished the first game, and the second game I got as far as the whole Victor Zsasz running you around from telephone to telephone, and I went, lost interest. I don't like timed missions. If you want to pick me off in a game, though, give me a timed mission.
Well, the funny thing is, it's a side mission. You don't have to complete it. That's number one. And number two, it wasn't that hard to do, because all you had to do was be able to fly, you know. And the thing is that the entire thing is that it's the same as the Ra's al Ghul thing, in which you have to do, you have to fly correctly. You know, it's just a flying thing. And, you know, they give you plenty of time to get to the phone. It's that was never a big deal with me. The thing about it is that there was nothing in the second game that was much like the scarecrow scenes from the first game, right?
The scarecrow scenes were pretty cool. I like those.
So what they did in this game, in Origins, with the Mad Hatter, was they did a Mad Hatter version of the scarecrow scenes, which were pretty effective, but I would have liked to have been able to complete it without a game-ending bug.
Right.
So, you know, and there's no way I can say, well, you know, and that's the other thing that bothers me, is that there's only one save game, it's for a single slot, and if, you know, something bad happens, well, screw you, you know, and I don't understand that either. Maybe it's not like the, when Ubisoft tried that with the Nintendo DS as a piracy combat, you know, in which used game sales, you know, to combat used game sales. I don't understand the idea of having, not letting the player save anytime they like, or at least save at the checkpoints that they want. You know, Deus Ex allows you to save anywhere you like. So it's just bad gameplay. I mean, bad QA, bad everything. Bad design, you know. And like I said, you know what? I wrote this, you know, Shigeru Miyamoto was right, you know. A Rush game is bad forever, you know. So, anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback. Here's a game that neither of us played, but it's considered one of the best games ever released for the Apple II.
And we do have some listeners in Europe, so perhaps one of our European listeners can chime in and tell us more about Gaming Flashback, Bolo. Bolo is a video game created for the BBC microcomputer by Stuart Cheshire in 1987 and later ported to the Macintosh in its most popular incarnation. Cheshire's Bolo is a networked multiplayer game that simulates a tank battlefield. In Bolo, the player commands a tank that can be driven around a battlefield that is viewed from above. The tank is relatively well armored and will take a number of hits before being destroyed. Tanks can also be destroyed by driving them into too deep water. The tank's primary weapon is its cannon, which fires only in the direction the tank is pointed and has a fairly fast rate of fire. The tank also carries mines as a secondary weapon, which can be dropped on the move or planted by an engineer who runs from the tank and drills the mine into the ground. In games where the hidden mine setting is activated, such mines are invisible to other players until they drive quite close to them, often too close to stop in time. Hidden mines remain visible to the player who planted them and to other members of his team. Ammunition for both the cannon and the mines can be refilled at a limited number of supply bases scattered around the map. The bases also repair damage to tanks, but this depletes the armor of the base. Base's supplies of ammunition and armor refill slowly. The strategic goal of the game is to capture all the bases on the map. Unclaimed neutral bases may be claimed by simply driving one's tank over them, after which the player and his or her team may draw upon such friendly bases' resources. Hostile bases can be captured by shooting them until their armor supply is reduced to zero, after which any player may drive over them to claim them for one's own team. Bases that have recently re-armored damaged tanks are more easily seized, since the armor supplies take some time to regenerate. And I have to scroll down. A primary tactic of the game is the capture and planting of pillboxes, which are also scattered around the map. Pillboxes are initially hostile and will shoot at any tank that approaches them. Like the supply bases, pillboxes can be shot until destroyed, after which they can be redeployed and become friendly to that player's team. Unlike the bases, pillboxes can be picked up by the tank's engineer and then moved to more strategic locations. The engineer, better known as the LGM for Little Green Man, can also perform building tasks. In order to do this, he must first be sent to a forest to cut trees, which act as cash in the Bolo world. He can then build roads in order to speed travel, or concrete walls to protect bases from traps. to protect bases and form traps. The engineer can be killed in these missions, and a replacement will parachute in after a time delay. Killing enemy engineers has also developed its own set of tactics, one of the nastiest being to plant a mine in a forest where the enemy is known to be collecting trees. The social aspect of Bolo can't be emphasized enough, partly owed to its chat feature. Now, let me try that again. The social aspect of Bolo can't be emphasized enough, partly owed to its chat feature. Often players would simply chat for half an hour, using the time that they were waiting for the last person to join a pre-arranged game, because team play tends to be more fun and creates much more opportunities for strategic and tactical operations. Experienced players would often rather wait for others to join and play in teams of 2x2, 2x3, 3x3, 2x2x2 games, etc., rather than play 1 versus 1 or 1 versus 1 versus 1 games, etc. Although it seems possible to set a time limit, this feature was rarely used. Instead, the game ends when one side has successfully captured all the supply bases, preventing the other team from gaining ammunition. In practice, most games generally end before all the bases have been captured, as the losing team concedes that its supply situation has become untenable due to a combination of lost and spiked bases.
So, yeah, I mean, neither of us played this game, but I will say this, you know, there is a rivalry as to which platform had the biggest impact on gaming, and that is between the Apple II and the Commodore 64.
Oh, it's clearly the Commodore 64.
Well, hey, wait a minute. We don't know. I was a Commodore 64 fanboy, right? But a lot of the biggest games that ever came out started on the Apple II, like Autoduel, you know? Oh, Autoduel. When are they going to remake that? Anyways, I digress. I'm sorry. I'm tired of having to emulate the damn thing. I want a new Autoduel. At least upgrade the graphics or something, you know?
Car Wars.
Well, maybe that's the problem. Steve Jackson is a prick, so. He is. He's a prick, from what I understand. Anyways, we're going to move on to the game news. EA splits from Tiger Woods. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Electronic Arts is parting ways with one of the most recognized celebrity partners. In a post on the company's website today, it was revealed that Tiger Woods would no longer be featured in its PGA Tour Golf Series. According to EA, EA Sports and Tiger Woods have made a mutual decision to end our partnership, which includes Tiger's named PGA Tour Golf game. We've always been fans of Tiger, and we wish him well and continued success in all his future endeavors. Despite losing its most recognizable face, the PGA Tour series will continue. EA said that its partnership with the PGA Tour, quote-unquote, remains strong and is currently preparing a new entry for mobile platforms and next-generation consoles. EA's collaboration with Woods began in 1998 with the release of Tiger Woods' 99 PGA Tour Golf. Electronic Arts was among the numerous corporate partners of Tiger Woods who stood by with the golfer after he admitted into... Electronic Arts was among the numerous corporate partners of Tiger Woods who stood by the golfer after he admitted to a series of marital, quote-unquote, transgressions in 2009. However, the publisher began featuring Woods with other golfers in the box art, or as it did for the 2012 edition of the game, focusing almost entirely on the presence of the Masters golf course. Now, what this tells me is that Tiger Woods costs too much, and he's not generating golf game sales that he used to.
I think that's probably part of it. And I wonder, too, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Madden curse, right, of whoever's on the cover of Madden and ends up getting cursed. Or was it the NCAA curse? I can't remember which. There could have been dual curses. I don't remember.
That's the point here, because he started in 99 and for 10 years, he was on an incredible streak. So
yeah, he was on an incredible streak, but he, you know, he hasn't done much lately. And I think maybe EA is starting to question the wisdom of attaching a game to any individual personality. If you do PGA Green Jacket Golf or whatever you want to call it, you're not tied to an individual at that point, and you're not tied to their career up or down.
I just think, you know, the golf is selling itself in this case.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just golf. I mean, it's golf, yeah.
People that buy golf games don't buy it because Tiger Woods is on the cover.
Well, they don't anymore anyway. I mean, the thing is, here's the thing. Tiger Woods is a recognizable name to the average consumer, right? And I wonder if that fame has plateaued. Regardless of whatever happened to Tiger Woods, maybe it's no longer enough that, you know, there's enough casual players who say, okay, we get it, Tiger Woods. But they're more attracted to now to the golf part of it, you know?
Well, in my mind, he would always be that cute little kid golfing on the Johnny Carson show.
Did he golf on the Johnny Carson show?
He was like four golfing on the Johnny Carson show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't been on Carson yet. What? Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead.
Rumor, Xbox One software development kit plagued by 11th hour bugs. It's not a follow-up to our story on the 11th hour last week. Rumor has it that Microsoft is busting a gut to clear up errors with the Xbox One software development kit ahead of the console's launch next month. Various anonymous development sources told Kotaku that there is a number of issues with the software development kit. The sources say a collection of bugs was uncovered in the most recent version of the development software and that some games have had to be resubmitted for certification with a newer version of the SDK. As a result, both Microsoft and development teams are said to be in to get software ready for launch. It's going to be a fun few weeks for Microsoft QA, one source said. However, another source said this kind of thing always happens at hardware launch and isn't necessarily indicative of potential problems for consumers at launch. The Xbox One drops in North America, Western Europe, and selected PAL territories on November 22nd.
You know, not having it launch worldwide on the 22nd is seeming to be smarter and smarter all the time, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing is that they're right. This always happens in a hardware launch. You know, I think we're so connected right now to the industry that we hear about this stuff now. But
well, I think originally the rumor was that there were problems with the video card drivers, and then that got ironed out. And now they're saying it's an SDK as a whole. How much of that is still old video drivers or not, I don't know.
It's always something, isn't it?
It's always something.
Yeah. So
I have to say this, though. I have not heard of games having to go through recertification this close to launch before. That's new. So,
well, the thing is that how many games actually go through certification in the first place in the past? I mean, aside from the Xbox 360.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is that we also have other news about the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, and this probably has a lot to do with it, that the Xbox One, they're saying that there's going to be like a 15 to 20 minute day one update. You know,
PS4 will have a 300 meg update. How long that's going to take depends on your internet connection.
Yeah. On the plus side, there are also other rumors that you'll be able to play your games while it's doing the update. So it's,
I hope so. Well, I guess we'll find out.
Well, I mean, I can, you know, when I do the fall dash update, the Xbox fall dash update, in, you know, it always takes like 10 to 15 minutes anyway.
I think the issue is that not just the update, but any potential problems with losing your connection during the update. We saw that with the Wii U,
yeah,
where they were having a 2-hour update that ended up bricking machines.
I think Microsoft knows something about online updates. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think they do too.
Yeah, I mean, it'll if it disconnects, it'll just start over. I would imagine, you know, say, oh, you broke the connection, we'll have to do this over again. No problem. You know, and the thing is, you were still going to have to do an online check-in anyway with the Xbox One. So it's, you know, people had to do that anyway. So, you know, so long as you get that out of the way, you know. I will say this, though. I did let my Xbox Live expire. Not because I don't want Xbox Live. It's just that I don't need it right now.
You know, right.
I'm going to wait until I get the next gen machine before I start, you know, before I plunk down the year's worth. Also, you know, Amazon.
Well, doesn't it carry over? I mean, if you have a year with the Xbox.
Oh yeah, I mean, doesn't that carry over? I'm not going to have any reason to go on Xbox Live until the Xbox One launches.
I see.
And also, remember, Amazon often has some incredible deals. So I'm wondering if on, say, Black Friday, they'll have something like a year of Xbox Live Gold for $30 or something like that.
That's true. Or maybe Microsoft will start doing one of those, you know, dollar a month deals that you let you stack.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, wait. I know. I remember like 2 years ago, you were collecting those 1 month Xbox Live cards like crazy.
I wasn't collecting them. I just didn't use them. I'd buy games and they would sit around.
Oh, okay. I know someone who basically paid for his entire Xbox Live experience with those cards. You know,
so I don't play games online, so I don't see the point to having Xbox Live. So,
well, Well, we're going from Microsoft to Apple now. Apple sells 33.8 million iPhones, 14.1 million iPads in September quarter. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Apple just released its fourth quarter earnings for the period ending September 28th, 2013. And it's good news for the iPhone business, which saw sales jump by 26%. Apple said it sold another 33.8 million units during the quarter, although it didn't provide a model breakdown. Most are likely attributed to the 5S and not the 5C. The sales total for the iPhone represents a new September quarter record for the popular device, Apple said. Apple's tablet business, meanwhile, failed to hit expectations, and the iPad sold 14.1 million units, falling short of the 14.5 million units expectation, but still up slightly from last year's 14 million sold during the same period. Overall, Apple posted quarterly revenue of $37.5 billion, up from last year's $36 billion, and a quarterly profit of $7.5 billion, down from $8.2 billion, while gross margin was 37% compared to 40% in the year-ago quarter. Wait, they're selling more iPhones but not making as much money? Okay. Tim Cook, Apple CEO, said, "We're excited to go into the holidays with our new iPhone C and iPhone S, iOS 7, and the new iPad mini with Retina display and the incredibly thin and light iPad Air, the new MacBook Pros, the radical new Mac Pro, OS X Mavericks, and the next generation iWork and iLife apps for OS X and iOS." So, it's interesting to read this with a conjunction. Now, Samsung wasn't very optimistic about the future. According to Samsung, you know, they think that the smartphones have plateaued. You know, you're not going to have the same. You're not going to have any growth from here on out because everybody has an iPhone, has a smartphone.
I think there's a certain amount of logic to that. I know when you're looking at the iPhone sales and selling 33 million phones is a fantastic total number. Yeah. But if you break it down, the iPhone 5C, which is their new model, is apparently doing very, very poorly. And, you know, they thought that it was going to be a low-end phone, that it would get them a toehold in the billion consumer market that is China. And the 5C just has gone nowhere. Its orders are about half as much as that of the 5S. So, I think what there is room for is there's room for the right product. And if you have the right product like the 5S or the 5 or the 4 or the 4S, you end up doing gangbuster sales. But a lackluster product is met with lackluster response.
Wait, now correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't the Surface get a boost in sales recently?
The Surface had a couple of boosts in sales. The Surface Pro 2 has actually had a huge boost in sales. And I think the Windows 8.1 has helped as well.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the Windows 8 is really what's been hurting the Surface more than anything else.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because there is the thing about these smart devices is that there's just so many tablets and smartphones that can go around, you know?
Right.
I mean, I think we've reached a point of we're getting close to a point of saturation. I mean, there are maybe new markets. And the thing that I can think of is something that Virgin has always known about. And that is the really low end, you know, selling to lower income countries, you know, I'm not going to say cheaply built, but economically built phones, you know, smartphones. And the thing is, we've got to the point where smartphones are very inexpensive to develop, you know, to produce. I mean, you can get a reasonably good smartphone for $100, you know, yes. One of those pay-as-you-go phones.
Yes.
And it isn't anything, you know, special. You know, it is low end, but it still has a touch screen. Well, you know, it still has
Virgin Mobile actually has the Galaxy 3. I mean, they have the iPhone. So, you know, it's interesting that somehow they can do these phones with a $55 a month plan, whereas the same phone on Sprint's network, which is the exact same network as Virgin Mobile, is $110 a month. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, I would have rather done Virgin Mobile because they have their $35 plan in which you get unlimited data, unlimited text, and limited, I think like 300 minutes of 300 talk, minutes. You know, and
I was on that plan for a very long time and ended up upgrading to the unlimited talk because I needed my phone for business purposes.
Yeah, but the thing is, I never use my phone to call that much. So the $35 plan is ideal for me. The problem is that I was transferring my home phone, and you can't do that to a you can't transfer your home phone to a pay as you go.
Right, because the exchanges are a little bit different, right?
So I have to wait 2 years for my plan with T-Mobile to end, and then I can transfer my 212 number to a pay as you go. So, I mean, I'm satisfied with T-Mobile as well. I mean, I functionally have unlimited, you know, because I at the lowest thing they have I have the 5 gigabyte plan, right? But I'm finding that I have so many Wi-Fi outlets that I seldom ever even approach that gig.
That's true. And in New York, that's absolutely going to be the case.
Yeah. For the first time, I actually reached the 2 gigabyte limit for the 4G GTE, the 4 GTE, you know, the ultra fast 4G. And you say, well, now you can only get 4G. Oh, my heart is so broken.
T-Mobile used to have a deal. I don't know if they still do this or not, but they used to have a deal where if you had a mobile hotspot in your home, when you were home, your phone calls would go over your mobile hotspot.
Wi-Fi calling if I want to use it, but it's pointless since I have unlimited talk.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I mean, I have had to use it in cases in which, you know, I'm in a television studio, right?
Right.
And I found that I cannot get a signal from within the studio. However, there is a public Wi-Fi at the studio. Well, it's not so public. They hide the, you know, they enter in the password for you.
Right.
I mean, it saves it, but you're not allowed to know the password. So I've actually had to Wi-Fi call from inside the studio. So, I mean, it's neat, you know. And you could also do that with the messaging as well, Wi-Fi messaging.
Right.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Jordan.
NVIDIA Shield update adds official PC streaming, console mode, and more Android support. This comes to us from PC Gamer. With the NVIDIA Shield's PC streaming function now out of its beta phase, the handheld's latest update should bring more flexibility to an already innovative device. The machine's new patch also introduces a new console mode and increased gamepad support for touchscreen games alongside Android 4.3, according to a press release today. The Shield's PC streaming functionality is called Game Stream, and NVIDIA is billing it as a way to beam bleeding-edge games like Batman Arkham Origins and Assassin's Creed 4 at 720p resolution into a living room setup. This is possible when paired with the system's new console mode and a compatible Bluetooth controller, according to NVIDIA. The update also adds controller support for a new batch of Android games originally conceived with a touchscreen control scheme. The Shield does not have a touchscreen built in, but the addition of physical controls should make adapting more Android games to the machine even easier, depending on your preference as a player.
Yeah, I want this. It's $300, so at some point I want this. It's really cool.
My only beef with it is when you're playing Android games, there are certain cell phone based games that are meant to be done portrait style instead of landscape style, and those become pretty much impossible to play on the Shield.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, I would probably go for games that were specifically built for the Shield anyway.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just like the Ouya, you know, Ouya can play Android games, but there are some specific Ouya Android games, you know.
Right, right.
But the thing is that, you know, you have PC streaming in which you can play your PC game on the controller and use your controller as the controller. So have you noticed this is the wave of the future right now?
Everybody, streaming games, yes.
No, everybody is allowing you to play your game on your controller set. Other people can use the TV, you know.
Right.
Or in the case of the Xbox One and the PS4, they allow you to do a split screen so that you can watch TV and play your game at the same time. You know, I mean, who'd have thunk it? PNP. Remember
now what I need to see though, and I haven't been able to determine this yet. I've looked around on GameStream and so on and so forth. Originally, the streaming would only work if you had certain graphics cards. And I don't know if they've now opened that up, regardless of graphics card, allowing you to stream anything.
Well, the NVIDIA Shield is basically a graphic card that's a controller.
Right.
You know, that's what they do. That's what NVIDIA does. So it's, but the funny thing is I do AMD and NVIDIA, and I think AMD is supposed to be in bed with Radeon. Well, the other amusing thing is when I play Deus Ex and I play Batman, both the NVIDIA and the AMD logos come up. So it's sort of like, you know, it's like they have to play nice. And they do play nice together, you know. And I was really enjoying Batman Arkham Origins until it stopped me from playing. Seriously. There's just so much, you know. I don't know if I'd forgive it. I just want to finish
the game. The game was great right up until it started sucking.
It didn't suck, though. The thing is, it crashed. It was good, and then what happened sucked. So
yeah, apparently it is still linked to the GTX 650 or higher graphics card.
So on the iPad update, I had to tell it to install the apps. So right now I have music and I have apps. I don't have movies, which isn't a tragedy for me right now, but I would like to have movies at some point on my iPad. Apple, you make things so difficult. Have you noticed that Apple sometimes likes to do stuff that just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever?
Apple likes to think that they know better than everybody else in the industry. And if it means violating industry standards to do that, they will be more than happy to do that.
I'm not even talking about industry standards. I'm talking about common sense.
Yes.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Fans trash Call of Duty booth at Games Expo. And this comes to us from Kotaku. Someone at Activision thought it would be a good idea to hand out $200 editions of the next Call of Duty game, which is Ghosts, to the first 500 people who could get to the games booth at the Milan Games Week. No other rules, just get there first. You can probably guess what happened next. Accounts from the showroom floor say that after a civil enough start, as the crowd got bigger, hundreds of people went crazy, rushing the booth. In the process, they trashed the booth so badly it had to be closed down. A reporter from Italy's Il Messaggero. Oh, I'm sorry, my Italian is very bad. Anyways, the newspaper was there and says, while caught in the crowd, they were kicked, shoved, and slapped, and there was a video of what was going on. So, speaking of common sense.
Yeah, giving away a $200 package without any kind of way of controlling it is...
Because, you know, the first people are, of course, they're going to be civil. They know they're going to get a copy. But when you have a couple hundred people, then the thoughts come in, oh, wait a minute. I don't want to be the 501st person.
Yes.
You know, and for those who don't know, the $200 Call of Duty game, Call of Duty Ghost game, comes, among with other things, a 1080p video camera. Which is kind of cool. I mean, it may be one of those cheap 1080p video cameras, but it's a video. And it comes with a visor that allows you to actually film things in first person, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I actually pre-ordered it for the Xbox One and then thought better of it. Wait a minute. I'm going to be spending $550 on the Xbox One. Do I really want to spend $250 or something like that on one game?
On a game, probably not. Yeah,
that's a bit of an expense. So I'm going to say, oh well, I'll just get, you know, I do want to play Ghosts and much more than Battlefield 4. There are several things about Ghosts that I really like. One of them is the squad mode. Check this feature out. You make 10 characters, right? And you outfit them any way you like, right? And then you and those and you adopt the identity of one of them, and the other 9 come into the field with you. And whatever you outfitted them with, and whatever perks you used on them, they will behave in that way. So, example: if you handed a sniper rifle to one of them, they're going to go and try and find a position to take and try and snipe people from, you know. It sort of harkens back to me like the old Unreal Tournament. Remember the AI with that? And here's the even cooler part. Your team is going to be available, and other people may select that team to fight against, right? And you'll get reports back on how your team was doing against other people. And, you know, you don't get any penalty. You just have people fighting, playing against your team, and you're finding out how they did against them, which is really cool.
ETA to someone creating a Team Fortress 2 team in 3, 2, 1.
So, I mean, it's a really cool concept. There's other stuff too. I mean, they just released this Horde mode, which is complete science fiction. I mean, they have these mutant creatures, you know, that's sort of like a cross between Half-Life and Starship Troopers, you know, that you're doing a horde mode against, and it's 1 to 4 players. I mean, they're going all out with Call of Duty Ghosts.
I've never been a fan of the Call of Duty games. I couldn't tell you.
But I was watching this video, and you know what I was thinking? There are these people fighting these alien creatures, which look like rejected H.R. Giger monsters. And I think, remember when Call of Duty used to be about World War II? It's just bizarre.
They had a horde mode in the Halo games, too, if I remember right.
It started with Gears of War. They started the mode craze. And they actually called it horde mode. You know,
for the horde.
Yeah. Anyways, so we're going to move on to reader feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
Listener feedback from Alpha Shard. I'm rather puzzled by the hardware failures already at PS4 XBone. Seems like a lack of foresight to make sure their peripherals to work. Jordan, the Prince of Persia games are platformers, not adventure. Okay. Question of the week. My favorite adventure game has to be Gabriel Knight. Each game in the series was a dark, thrilling mystery, and the main characters are great to follow. Speaking of which, Activision is licensing out the Gabriel Knight IP to Jane Jensen for a remake, thanks in part to the Kickstarter project Mobius that Jane got funded, along with other adventure game projects inspired by someone at Activision who had a passion for the Gabriel Knight series to convince the company to license out the series to Jane. What has me excited is seeing adventure games get more notice as a viable product again by game companies, especially Activision.
You know what?
I want to take back my what I said last week as far as adventure games and point and click adventure games specifically. I do have a favorite, and that was that game with the mammoths whose name escapes me now, which I the had mammoths? In my head before I started talking. I'm gonna have to look it up. Siberia. Siberia 1 and 2.
Remade. They have a Siberia HD. Yeah.
Siberia was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Loved that game.
Yeah. So, and by the way, speaking of adventure games, now another adventure duo from the Sierra Online Games, Laurie and Corey Cole, who are best known for the Quest for Glory series, have announced that they're making their own adventure game again, and of course this is being Kickstarted because everything's being Kickstarted, and it's really intriguing. It's called Bolt Riley, and it's set in Jamaica about a poor guy who's trying to become a reggae superstar, and instead of spells he has inspirations. So basically there's a lot of reggae music, you know, and the thing is that how many games do you know that are set in Jamaica to begin with?
None that I can think of.
I mean, this is actually unmined territory, and it's really intriguing. So we're going to move on to the next.
Will people be counting the marijuana references?
Yeah. By the way, Pass the Duchy on the left-hand side had nothing to do with drugs.
Okay.
Yeah. People don't seem to understand that. Anyways, from Arthur V, at Xbox and PS headsets... Personally, I don't see this as a problem. As long as they provide pack-in headsets so that I can discuss my numerous relationships with my opponent's mother on the battlefield, I'll be fine. I can see how it is a problem for rich folk who blasted loads of cash on some shelled reptilian headset, but I am indifferent to the opinions of others. I fully support democracy and believe there's the opinions of the few should be overlooked and they should be all quietly shot. So, yeah, that sounds like something that George Carlin says, is that my idea of rights is that you have no rights at all and I will shoot you. At Oak, can you hear what the Rockstar is cooking? As long as it's not Oni 2, I'd be glad to play anything Rockstar makes. Wait a minute. One, Oni was a Bungie game, not Rockstar. That's number one. Although, wait, Gathering of Developers, was that what eventually became Rockstar?
I'm not sure.
Because Oni was published by Gathering Developers, and it was developed by Bungie, and I wonder if Gathering Developers became Rockstar. Anyway, to me, they proved their development ability time and time again. I'm curious what it'll be. I'm guessing it's Bully 2, but it could be Red Dead as well. Redemption was voted as the best game of the last decade, so I'd expect Rockstar to indulge us with a sequel. Wait a minute. Who voted as the best game of the decade? I mean, I will say that Red Dead Redemption is really, really good, and it's one of the few Rockstar games that I actually completed. I think it's the only Rockstar game I've ever completed.
I'm not a fan of mobster flicks, so the whole Grand Theft Auto games have been lost on me, but I did really enjoy the hell out of Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, it was a, and you had your own morality. Either you could be a nice guy, you know, or at least as nice as you can possibly be, or you can be a loathsome son of a bitch. I guess this is spoiler territory, but this is a 2-year, 3-year-old game. But what did you think of the I Know You quests, in which the mysterious stranger comes up to you and talks about your life and has you go visit people that you had contact in the past?
Yeah, I found that fascinating. I don't remember exactly what the point of all of it was, but I remember playing through all of them.
Well, here's the thing. The mysterious stranger, for one, stands on a spot, right? With three chances, he talks about what a beautiful, what a beautiful view it is, right? That is where John is buried later on.
Oh, okay.
Also, remember, John Marston screams, "Damn you," and shoots at him 3 times at point-blank range, and he's unaffected. And I love what the mysterious stranger says in response to John Marston saying, "Damn you." "Many have, many have." So, you know, you don't know if it's God, the devil, the angel of death, you know. I'm inclined to believe it's God because, you know, what, God damn you.
It could be, yeah.
So, anyway, but I just love that part of the – that to me elevated the game, just that little sequence, right? And also coming back as Jack Marston. I know we're getting into heavy spoilers, but I don't care at this point.
It's a really old game now.
Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, when you come back as Jack Marston, it's interesting that you have no choice but to kill the FBI chief. But I always wondered what would happen if I had killed his wife. I mean, it makes sense in terms of the story, if he really wants revenge. But I didn't do it. But, it would have made sense. I would have wondered what would happen if I'd done that.
I seem to remember that when I ran up to the FBI guy and just killed him point blank, it's like, oh, it's finally that guy. Bam, he's dead. It was game over.
Really? Because I had to do the showdown, you know, the quick draw. I didn't know you could just shoot him without talking to him.
I saw him and went, oh, let's get this over with. Blam.
You know
over.
What? But that,
damn
is,
it.
That is, by
reload.
The way, that is, no, but that is actually a valid way to end the game. You know, you don't even talk to him. You just see him, boom, he's dead. But what I really love is when you do that, after you do the, after you kill him, the thing, the title comes out, Red Dead Redemption, you know, to punctuate it, you know.
Right, right.
I love that. I mean, the game is so well written, you know. Although it does have some of the usual Rockstar themes. We're not going to get into it, but.
Right, right.
Anyways, the question of the week. All my gaming life, I played quite a few adventure games, but I don't remember most of them. Broken Sword 3 was very good. By the way, they have the Broken Sword 6, and of course it's Kickstarted. I recently played Anna, but had to quit because of lighting issues on my laptop, but my highlight was Dreamfall, The Longest Journey. I know that the prequel was better, never played it, but I quite enjoyed it. Actually, people didn't like the prequel. Just so you know, there is, of course, the third game of the series coming out, too. Another highlight was Beavis and Butthead game on the Mega Drive. It was funny because the Beavis and Butthead IP was aimed at retarded adolescent teens, but the game itself was hard as nails and had puzzles so difficult that you need a degree in critical thinking just to get to the end. Okay, you had a Mega Drive, right? Did you know about the Beavis and Butthead game?
I did not know about the Beavis and Butthead game.
Oh, okay.
Might have not been something that was released in the U.S. I don't know.
Well, it fits the time frame, though, for Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, it does.
So look for our show notes at Gaming Podcast .net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us in comments at your blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news and at gamestooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So, the question of the week is just comments, questions to us. We don't have any question of the week this week. Just ask us questions and we shall answer, or at least try to answer. Well, it's true.
Did you see that there is the more information about Walking Dead season 2 coming out?
Yeah, they're teasing it tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be interesting. So we'll probably have something on that next week.
Yeah, the thing is that just so you know, the Twitter picture shows Clementine's hat. And the text of the not the text of the picture, but the, Telltale says, remember to keep that hair short, you know.
Right.
So so it's going to be tomorrow. I just, you know, and since they have Clementine's hat, it's nice to see that Clementine is probably going to be a part of it. And I'm pretty 100% sure that the characters we met in the 400 days downloadable content will be there too. So, yeah. And I want,
I hope so.
I wonder if you're going to play as Clementine, though.
I don't know. Well, we'll have to wait and find out.
The thing is that the 400 days content indicates that it's only like just over a year after the events of the Walking Dead season. I thought they might spin it forward to 2013 because that would give Clementine a chance to be 19 years old, right? So you could play her as an adult. So if she's only going to be 11 years old in the season, I don't see how you could play as her, but it's entirely possible.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. So that's it for this week, and I don't really have much else to say. It's just one of those days.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say. Good night, everybody.